Well, dealing with knee pain can make even routine tasks uncomfortable and can certainly affect your mood and your outlook. It certainly has mine in, over the years at times. And when it keeps you from things like gardening or playing with your kids or maybe your grandkids, it certainly affects your quality of life. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We are lucky to have two experts with us today who will keep us, or help at least, us keep our bodies in good shape overall. And we'll share some important information about how to deal with knee pain. Lori Tyne Brody, one of our guest physical therapists and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine. And Lori, always great to have you with us.
Good to be here. I wish I was wearing shorts and a tank top like that lovely picture you posted on your website
on our Facebook page. Yeah.
Yeah, and your instead of my boots today.
Yeah, you got that right. Bill Boisenault, our other guest, senior physical therapist with UW Sports with UW Hospitals and Clinics. Great to see you, Bill.
Great to be back. We are talking about snow shoveling injuries today, aren't we?
Oh,
falls on ice,
you know,
and slush.
Or? Oh, I know. Well, Larry and I were talking before the show. I got up this morning and I opened my garage door and I thought, oh, I'm thinking maybe I can just use a shovel, push some of this aside so I can get my car out. I took one shovelful and said, oh, no.
It was heavy.
This is snowblower kind of snow. It was tough. Yeah, be careful out there.
Well, my all-wheel drive, I tell you what, I ran the shovel over the sidewalk. I refuse to shovel the driveway. It's a big driveway, and it ain't going to be shoveled ever again until next winter.
Well, this should be gone, right? This
The weather guy I said by Wednesday it's going to be gone. So, yeah.
Well, let's talk about, I don't know if it's nicer things, but
I don't know. Well, outdoor soccer starts this week, so I don't know if the kids are going to bring shovels to their first training and clear the fields or what. But
well, there you get some knee pain.
They get some knee pain. Yes, they do. Lots of it.
Patellofemoral pain, and Judith said. Yeah. You should talk about what's patella and what's femoral and separate those out first, and maybe it's not a bad idea to do.
Sure, that's easy. Your patella is your kneecap. It is the largest, we call it a sesamoid bone, because it's a free-floating bone that sits within the tendon of your quadriceps muscles, the big muscles on the front of your thigh. It's embedded in there, so it acts like a pulley, creates a better lever so that your quadriceps can work well, and the undersurface of your patella or kneecap contacts the end of your thigh bone, the femur. So the articulation that the patella makes with the end of your thigh bone, the femur, is called the patellofemoral joint.
Okay.
So,
and it's it breaks down once in a while.
Oh, it breaks down a lot because if you think about it, it kind of functions as the a little bit like a teeter-totter does, where you have your quadriceps on one end, then your patella is the axis in the middle, and then you have this small tendon that runs from the end of the bottom of your patella down to your shin bone. So your quadriceps generate this huge force that's balanced out by this small tendon on the other end of the patella, and so it creates a huge compressive force on the undersurface of your kneecap, and the more time you spend in like a squatting position doing squats, weighted squats, lunges, things like that, puts a lot of pressure on that joint, and the undersurface of your kneecap wears out.
Yeah, there are lots of sports that require that
kind
of motion.
Yeah, I was thinking about catchers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so catchers, but there's lots of sports and lots of exercise people do during a workout, not just squats with weights, but the lunges that people do and some of the core stuff and some of the yoga positions. There is a tremendous load in that across that joint.
And typically the symptoms, as they come, they occur right at the inside of the knee?
You hurt in the front of your knee. And the classic is it hurts with stairs, sometimes going upstairs, mostly going downstairs. And then they have what they call the moviegoer sign. Typically after you've been sitting for a longer period of time, such as the duration of a movie, you get up, the front of your knee hurts, your kneecap hurts.
Yeah.
And your knee feels better with straight than it does bent. So, for example, if you have to sit in a car or you're driving for a long time, sometimes your knees will start to hurt, kind of another moviegoer sign. And it used to be that we directed the treatment right at your kneecap and at your knee, but there's a large body of research now suggesting that the hip muscles play an important role in patellofemoral pain. So we're really increasing the scope of our focus to include the hip.
The hips.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so when somebody goes in with these kinds of complaints, if it's acute, they're going to focus on the knee and get that area settled down. But, you know, as Laurie often brings up in our conversations, why did it start in the first place?
In the beginning,
With enough rest, mostly people recover, but then what do you do to keep it from coming back again? And that's where addressing muscle imbalances at the hip, doing core work, foot and ankle biomechanics can impact what happens at the knee. And so rehab eventually should go beyond the kneecap area to completely get rid of it and then hopefully keep it from returning, coming back again.
Yeah, man, you guys know that, I mean, there's some research on this that people are reporting sometimes pain, chronic pain 20 years after it first mm-hmm. began.
Right. Well, it's like it's a classic area for arthritis. So if you injure yourself in your younger years, then as you start to develop degenerative changes in a lot of your joints, it will show up there as well. So the technical name for that is chondromalacia patella. So when you actually get wear and tear arthritic changes on the undersurface of your kneecap, then they term it chondromalacia patella. So that's actually damage to the articular surface, the articular cartilage on the undersurface.
And I imagine there's, if you're a runner, is there a connection with running? Let me put it that way. Doesn't have to be?
No, doesn't have to be. Much of this is, it's very mechanical. If you look at the alignment of the hip, the knee, and the foot, a lot of the torque that happens on the undersurface of the kneecap has to do with the alignment of the hip, the knee, and the foot. So to some extent, you're born with a certain alignment. And if you're born that way, then you don't have many problems unless you really abuse yourself. So for the runners who are lifetime runners, many of them were born with good mechanics. So for the rest of us, particularly females who have wider hips and already from the get-go have mechanical suboptimal alignment, I guess one would say, we have to work a little bit harder at hip strength, and we have to look at the foot to see if there's any change we need to make from the bottom up to help improve the alignment at the knee.
So you were talking about professionals and sort of preventing it in a way. How do we prevent it, or are there ways to prevent it, Bill?
Well, I think you look at kind of what we call a kinetic chain, the whole leg up into the trunk and the foot and ankle mechanics, hip strength, core, anything to do to try to normalize movement at the knee. And then you look at their activity. And it's more so in practice or the training where people get into trouble because of the hours and hours of training that they go into. So modifying training programs, modifying how they're doing a squat or how often doing lunges or squats and with how much weight can go a long way with prevention. But like you mentioned before, some people can have this for years and years. When you have that pain, it throws off how you stand and walk. Then you start developing problems at your hip or your mm-hmm. back. And it's kind of a cascade of things that can develop from this.
Well, you know, I was in Arizona last week with daughter Emily, and we went to the couple of Cactus League games, the Brewers games, and sitting there for several innings and then going to get up, and it's like, ooh, the knees are...
That's right.
Baseball knees.
That's right. That's right. Well, you've got a history of some knee issues,
well, yeah,
Larry. So any joint that has deterioration, you know, whether you want to call it arthritis or degenerative changes, it doesn't like being in one position for a long period of time. It likes to move. That's how the joint surfaces get lubricated. So whether you're standing, sitting, lying down, whatever, if you're in one position for a long period of time, you're going to be stiff when you get up.
Laurie Tynebrody and Bill Boisenault, our guests today. And, you know, my voice was pretty good right up until mm-hmm. the minute before we came on the air. And then suddenly it's just,
Of course.
I'm telling you, Cheyenne Lance is our on-air producer today. She will vouch for that. I was able to talk just fine. She's nodding her head, yes. But here we are, and we're going to get through it. I feel not too bad, but it's just that Arizona cold, I guess.
Well, keep it to yourself, please.
I will do my best. No shaking of hands or anything like that. Diane, well, by the way, if you want to join in, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page is The Larry Mueller Show, and hopefully you will do that, too. Diane in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning. I have two artificial knees. On one of them, I started hurrying about 6 months ago. And wondering, is there anything I can do about it? It's on steps, getting up from the sofa. Normal standing and walking is okay.
Well, how long ago did you have them done at the same time?
No, I had the one that hurts I had done first.
Okay.
About 5 years ago.
And
I do have arthritis, so I'm just wondering if that's what it is.
Okay. Well, did you have a total knee?
Yeah, total knee.
Okay. Then the arthritis shouldn't matter so much anymore because they've replaced those surfaces. So, you know, it may be that if it's hurting in your knee, you could be getting referred pain from elsewhere. Mm. Could be that you've changed how you move because you had your second knee done. So the mechanics of how you're walking, moving, things like that have changed because of that second replacement. Have you seen anyone for this problem?
No, I'm thinking about hoping it's not going to be below zero.
Yeah, we are too.
I'm gonna make an appointment with my knee doctor.
Yeah, I think so, and getting in to see a physical therapist to revisit, so maybe getting some new exercises that can help move you on at this point. It may be that, again, that things got stirred up when you had your second knee done, and you've overloaded that first knee.
Well, that other one I've had for about 4 years.
Yeah.
I had the right one first, and then the next year, and they've both been just fine until about 6 months ago.
Well, then you need to go in and figure out what's going on, because it shouldn't just start hurting out of the blue like that. So figure out what's going on. You know, see your doctor who did the knee replacement to make sure that there's nothing wrong with the replacement itself, and see a physical therapist to have them evaluate how you're moving, how you're standing, how you're walking, how you're sitting, to see if they can figure out some clues as to why you're having pain now.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I got an email from Nick in Milwaukee. Would you please describe some exercises to build core strength for someone with severe osteoporosis? So no crunching or twisting exercises, Bill.
Right. With osteoporosis, that's exactly right. You want to avoid flexion activities, or, you know, doing sit-ups and full sit-ups and crunches could potentially cause a fracture in somebody that was very much compromised. With somebody with this history, what I recommend, there are lots of core exercises that can be done. And a physical therapist could set up a good program within just a couple of visits to get a program started and a periodic update. But there are patients where the spine is loaded less, and you can do a lot of strengthening both for the trunk as well as the hips. But depending on how weak people are to start with, oftentimes you begin with isometric, where you assume a position and you hold, try to recruit some of the deeper core musculature. So part of this is just retraining as opposed to building strength per se. But again, with the history of osteoporosis, it'd be best if they saw a physical therapist who could examine them and then set up a safe program for them. I think tied to this, you know, Lori's experience in the pool can be a really good place to start for folks with this history. The spine's unweighted because of the buoyancy of the water, and you can do a lot of strengthening and aerobic work in the pool.
I'm always surprised. I think over the years, there have been times I go to a physical therapist, and even one visit, I mean,
Right. Yeah.
Can
right.
Wow, I'm doing these exercises. This is making a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm surprised at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time educating, you know, directly related to exercise, people that they're currently doing, they need to modify, what's happening at work or sleeping posture positions like we've discussed in the past. And should be a lot of time spent teaching and educating in that first visit.
Right, and to address Nick's question, you know, well, what are some good exercises? Well, there are lots of good exercises. So to say, well, this one's a good one and that one's a good one, you really have to look at the person doing it to see if they have sufficient strength and mobility to do the exercise correctly. So it's not, should you do this exercise, yes, or should you do this exercise, no, but how you do the exercise. So as Bill said, an isometric, you put them in a position, have them hold that. So we look and see, well, can you hold it? Can you maintain good posture? Well, then let's try adding another load to it. Let's extend an elbow. Let's extend a leg. Let's add another challenge somehow. Can you hold that? And so we sort of work from there step by step to figure out what are the right exercises for that person.
Yeah. Talking today with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody about physical therapy issues. I'm Larry Mueller, Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Steve in Montreal, it is your turn. Hi, Steve.
Well, good morning.
Thanks for calling.
Well, I have an issue. I have, as I sit here in my recliner, achy knees. Yesterday was just about a screamer, but I got through all the ski season with no problem whatsoever. Background, 35 years of concrete factory floor, picking up parts, twisting around. I have had a meniscus repair on both knees. And I'm trying to avoid replacement knees because I love being a downhill skier up here in the fabulous north of Wisconsin. Help! What can I do here? I'm getting desperate.
So you made it through downhill ski season. You didn't have any problems?
None whatsoever.
Right.
Let me throw this in. I have had them, I'll call it, lubed up for the last bunch of years just prior to the ski season. Didn't do it this year because I didn't have any pain. There's no pops or cracking.
Okay. And now they hurt.
Now they hurt like mad. Yesterday I was wanted to cry.
Right. Well, you stopped doing stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the season's over. That, you know, your knees were happy because you were using them, lubricating them, bending and straightening your knees, and so it kept them healthy. Now you're sitting in your recliner. They don't like that.
Recliner knees.
Yeah. There you go, Bill. Recliner knees. So you need to find an activity that you can do in this season. What do you do when the weather gets nice?
Well, the weather is not well. I go out and ride my motorcycle around and camp and do things like that.
Okay.
How about bicycle riding?
I would say ride a bicycle.
That's perfect.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Try a bicycle.
I love biking.
Yeah.
And if sound like you're fit, obviously you're doing downhill, a lot of downhill skiing. Your legs have to be pretty strong.
Yeah, they're pretty strong. So,
in the cycling, there's no pounding. The muscles are working. You're getting good movement at the joint.
Yeah.
It's good for your heart and lungs.
Yeah, but they're not going to like just sitting around. Knees don't like that.
No.
They need that weight bearing. You know, that when you're skiing, you have the weight and unweight. Your knees really like that. So bicycling can be the same way, where you weight and unweight as you spin around. Or even walking, try to get on a trail or a rubberized track or something that has some give to it. But that waiting and unwaiting can also be good. But the sitting's going to be bad.
And get yourself, if you've got a smartphone, get a Map My Ride app, which is free. And it's just a lot of fun to see where you went and also to see the calories burned and the distance traveled. It's just a lot of fun.
I don't have that one. I'll have to get that.
Oh, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. Good luck, Steve. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. We are turning next to Maureen in Eau Claire. Maureen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. I am a 66-year-old woman, active, and I had last week Monday come back from my strength training class and went for a brisk walk, felt great, stood on my deck, and I had an apple that my grandkids hadn't finished, so I threw it out to the squirrels, and as I wound up to throw and followed through, I felt a very strong twist, spasm popping in my lower right side. And looking it up on the internet, the only thing I can think of is internal oblique muscle spasm, twist, something. But it's been a week, and I've used cold or ice, I should say, and rest. And I called the urgent care, and they said just put on ice and meds. But it is actually sore to even touch at the bottom of my right side on the lower rib as you curve around to the side. If I touch it there, it hurts. And the hardest part of my day is, or should say night, is getting up in bed and then finding a position. And once I do, I can't move. Yeah. So I wake up all the time because of the pain when I want to move.
Right, right.
Any suggestions?
Well, so are you any better than you were 5 or 6 days ago?
It's hard to tell. I mean, I'm active. I can still put the wood down. I can still, I have a studio. I can climb the ladder to my studio, but it's just certain movements, and they still cause pain. And again, laying down, moving, it's only a certain movement. Better than a backache, but it's, I'm confused as to why it hurts. Okay. Even when I touch it.
Well, yes, the hypersensitivity, I mean, that can happen with a muscle injury, and if you're in the rib area as well, the bottom of the ribs, there are ligaments that attach to the ribs. I think using ice at this point is still probably a good idea for you. Activity that doesn't cause that sharp pain is really good for you to keep doing. You know, at this stage, bed rest, even if you could get comfortable lying down, wouldn't be good for you at this point in time. The one thing you might consider is getting a Velcro rib binder.
I do have one.
Okay.
And I have been using it, and then I thought, well, am I overextending now that I have this on? Am I doing things that I shouldn't do? But maybe I'll keep wearing that.
Yeah, I would. You know, you don't have to necessarily wear it all the time. If you're going to do something that you know stresses that area or can bring that pain on, then I would slap it on.
Okay.
And even, have you tried it at night?
Yes.
Okay. You know, I had a rib injury years ago, and I had to sleep in a chair in a recliner for about a week and a half. But I wouldn't worry about wearing the binder for at least another week, maybe a week and a half.
Okay.
You're not going to get weak in that time as active as you are.
And all right.
So I would continue with that and the ice and whatever medication they told you. And, you know, week from now, week and a half now, if you're not at least a third better to half better, then I'd go in and be seen and not just do it over the phone.
Yep. There you go. Good luck, Maureen. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Mike and Mazamani, you are up. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for the show. Within the last couple of years, I've developed non-diabetic neuropathy in my feet. My feet feel like they're on fire constantly. I'm taking quite a bit of gabapentin, which helps but does not completely alleviate the problem. So I'm just kind of wondering if there's anything I can do physical therapy-wise to address that.
Okay. Mike, have you seen, you've had it for a couple of years, have you seen anybody during this time frame besides for medications? Have you seen a physical therapist, for example?
No, I've seen a podiatrist a couple of times, and he just says, you know, I have non-diabetic neuropathy, and it could be coming from pretty much anywhere.
Okay. So have you had any diagnostic testing done, like EMG or any type of imaging?
No, I have not.
Okay. Well, I think that might be a good place to start. You know, if he's convinced you don't have diabetes, that's a good thing. But there's lots of conditions that can cause nerve pain, and gabapentin is a good medication for certain types of pain conditions. But there's some electrodiagnostic testing that a physician could do to try to find out exactly what is the cause of this. It can be coming from your spine. It can be peripheral nerves down into your lower legs and feet. The treatment would be different depending on what they found. And that's what I would recommend, because as a physical therapist, I wouldn't know where to start without that kind of direction. And
okay. Mm-hmm. So what kind of testing would you suggest?
Well, and if you see probably your primary care physician, if you have one, start there. They may send you to a neurologist, but there's electrodiagnostic testing that can give information about the nervous system and where it's working and where it's not working. And there's a battery of tests that they would do to assess that part of your nervous system.
Hmm. There you go.
Okay.
Good luck. Thank you. Mike, for calling. Appreciate it very much. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call. Dan emailed and wondered, very active with cross-country skiing, running, biking, paddling, but sucks at sticking with any sort of flexibility movement program. Passionate about getting better. He's in his 50s, as I said. He wants to be good when as he ages, and wonders if there's one thing you'd suggest.
I guess in a word, I'd say yoga.
That's what I was thinking too. It's something you can do in a group, and then also do on your own. You're working yourself from head to toe.
Right. The nice thing about it is, it sounds like he's really active, and to sit down and stretch your hamstrings, for example, is challenging for most of us. But yoga incorporates positional awareness, body awareness, flexibility, and strength all together. So you get some of that flexibility, but you also get strength and core and awareness all at the same time. So it doesn't feel like you're sitting and stretching.
Yeah. You know, some of us just weren't designed to do the splits. We have lots of tight muscles. So if you stretch each individual muscle one at a time, it would take you 2 hours. And very few people have that kind of time. And so something like yoga and you know, going to a good instructor, at least in the beginning, so you're taught the basics and how to do it properly. Probably get the biggest bang for the buck, I would think.
So that's an award. And I guess the other subcategory I'd say is if there are certain muscle groups that you know are tight and you're stiff, I try to figure out ways to incorporate stretching into things that you already do during the day. So, for example, when you're brushing your teeth, you can put one foot behind you and stretch your calves, or you can set your leg out, depending upon the setup of your bathroom, out on the counter and stretch your hamstrings or your inner thigh while you're brushing your teeth. So there are ways to figure out do that. If you're sitting at a desk, you can, you know, put your foot out on the floor and lean forward and stretch your hamstrings. Or, you know, there's a million different ways to build it into things you're already doing during the day. So then it becomes kind of a habit, and it doesn't seem like such a hassle.
And some of the classes, they combine yoga with Tai Chi or yoga with Pilates, and you get a good workout besides the flexibility part of it. And sometimes going to a group, you know, adds a little more incentive and motivation to show up and follow through.
Yeah. Right.
Not sure where he's from, but frankly, there are many, many places in the state where you're
there's lots of centers, not just health clubs that offer these kinds of classes and instruction, but there's private studios where groups go, and there should be something in his community.
Stephen Brown Deer, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hi, Larry. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm 47 years old, and I had a football injury in high school pretty much tore everything in my left knee, the ACL, MCL, and at that time it was, they immobilized it pretty much to let it heal, and then slowly they would loosen the brace so that it could move more. And there's pretty much not a day that's gone by since then that I haven't had, like, an ache in my knee, and there's quite a bit of calcification on the bones and stuff. I had the meniscus cleaned up a couple years ago, and that went well. But I'm just wondering if there's a surgery that could help clean that knee up better so that I can bend it, because I never really recovered all the ability to bend that knee.
I guess in a word, no. So they went in a couple of years ago and cleaned out your meniscus, and I'm guessing if there was anything in there that they could clean out to restore motion, they would have. But as long as it's been, you're not going to be able to regain that motion. Generally, after about 12 weeks in an immobilizer of some sort, it's really hard to get that motion back, which is why, lo and behold, they don't immobilize ACLs like that anymore. I remember when they immobilized ACLs like that. I treated a lot of those people, and we'd take them out and move them so that they wouldn't get stiff, but boy, we saw a lot of really stiff knees. At this point, they're not going to be able to revive motion. You know, the biggest outlier we do when all things fail is they manipulate your knee. Well, at this point, to manipulate your knee would cause so much damage that they wouldn't do it. If you had someone who's looking at your knee, who's taking care of your meniscus, you know, I'd talk to those folks and just ask them what the future holds for you. There are injections like Synvisc, things like that. But in terms of restoring your motion, no. So the key is going to be, if you haven't seen a PT, it might be a good time to do that. You want to make sure that you have lots of motion in your ankle and in the hip and in your low back, because those are the joints that are going to have to compensate for the lack of motion at your knee. So in order to accomplish your daily activities, you have to steal the motion from somewhere, and it's usually those adjacent joints. So we'll do whatever we can to keep those healthy. So seeing someone about that would be useful.
Yeah. Boy, that Synvisc was just a miracle for me. It doesn't work for everybody, I guess, but for me it was a miracle.
Yeah.
I really... good luck, Steve. Thank you so much for calling. John in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hi there. Hey, I was just wondering if your guests or you, Larry, have ever heard of prolotherapy and the Hackett-Hemwell Foundation, which my doctor, Jeff Patterson, introduced me to prolotherapy a good 10 years ago, and it's just great for my knees. So wondering if you guys have ever done a show on it, or if you're two people. I mean, the foundation.
Yeah, we've actually talked about it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, yes, I know Dr. Patterson, and we've at UW have done prolotherapy injections. Prolotherapy is a pretty large term for a lot of different types of injections. So in the case of your knees, John, I'm guessing that they injected it because of arthritis. The studies are still relatively inconclusive about the value of that, or figuring out what subcategories of people do well with prolotherapy injections. But typically, there's a number of different things you can inject, but in this case, they usually do autologous blood injections, where they take your own blood and then it's spun out, and at some point later, it's re-injected into your knee. They do that at various joints, but mostly the knee. There's also other kinds of prolotherapy injections where they use, for example, saline solution. Those are sclerosing injections, they call them, and that's to increase stability, typically at a hypermobile joint. So those two types of prolotherapy have very different indications and very different reasons for being done. So it's not a prolotherapy, yes or no, but what kind of prolotherapy and for what reason.
Yeah. Yep. So there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Another good question. Oh, they're all good.
They're all good.
Yeah. Terry in Wauwatosa, your turn. Hi, Terry.
Well, hello. Thank you for this informative program. It's great. I'm calling about my daughter. She's in her early 30s. When she was about 10, she broke her ankle, her growth plate below it, above it. It was a bad break.
Oh.
Consequently, now at this age, she was experiencing a lot of pain in her knee and her hip. Her hip was even popping. Well, of course, they traced it backwards to it's her ankle problem. They put a support in her shoe to lengthen her leg. I'm concerned she still has pain in her knee and her hips. I'm wondering, should she be doing physical therapy or exercises for those areas? And would those compression things like Tommy Copper help her knee or her hips?
Well, in terms of having somebody, you know, work on her knee and hip and give her some direction of things to do as well as things not to do would be really important. You know, what you described fits our discussion about a kinetic chain where one body region, something goes wrong in one body region, impacts adjacent regions and distant regions. So what you describe is a perfect example. You have a previous ankle injury. It doesn't resolve completely, and so it throws off how you stand and walk and run and jump. And so,
right. She's very active. And when you said kinetic chain earlier, a light bulb went off in my head.
Yeah. Well, that fits. So, you know, doing things, rehabbing up above the ankle is important. The question is, how much impact is the ankle still having? Sometimes you can't change enough. You can't change enough at the ankle. You have a hard time normalizing things at the knee and the hip. But if she hasn't had much attention paid to her knee and hip and up into the trunk, then that would be something that should be addressed and could end up helping her. And if she's had an orthotic or an insert for her foot, sometimes that orthotic needs to be adjusted. People's foot posture changes as we age and as time goes on, and sometimes what used to fit doesn't fit anymore. So having that looked at again may be useful as well.
Yeah, things to think about and do. Terry, thank you. Very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Meredith in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have been dealing with a shoulder situation, and I'm kind of trying to figure out who I need to see. I'm assuming I will need to go to a physical therapist, but I'm trying to figure out whether I should see a doctor before. Basically, it's range of motion problem and some pain, and I think it's probably related to, I had an injury probably 4 years ago. I was doing some kayaking, didn't know what I was doing. I don't think the back of the seat was up the way it was supposed to be. And so I came home from that vacation with a sore shoulder, and I basically did what I always do, which is ignore it and wait till it goes away, which it did.
Yep.
But that same shoulder is the one that I'm having the trouble with. And since that 4 years ago, I would hurt once in a while when I was doing some aerobics and had to throw my arm out kind of thing. So now it's, I don't know if it's because I usually sleep on my right side and that's the side that the shoulder bothers me on, but I can't put my arm as far back when it's straight up in the air or to the side, and like I have real trouble taking off clothing and if I try to reach my hand behind my back and, you know, to the middle of my back, that is very painful. So I think I need to do something. And should I go to a doctor? Should I go straight to a PT? What should I do?
Well, you can go straight to a PT, and I'd probably go to a PT pretty soon because it sounds like you're losing motion. Is this recent loss of, mm-hmm. is this loss of motion recent?
Yes, it's probably since January or so.
And any idea what caused that change?
No.
Okay. All right.
Other than maybe that I have been sleeping on my right side, okay. Mostly.
All right.
I don't.
Okay, so you can't get your arm up, say, to tuck in your shirt tails or?
I can get it to my waist, but going much further than my waist, it gets painful.
Yeah, you need to get in before you develop a full-blown frozen shoulder. Okay. Because it sounds like that's the direction you're heading.
Okay.
So I'd get in soon and have someone take a look at it and decide what's next. It may be that with some simple interventions and stretching and changing how you do things, you might be able to nip this and head back the right direction.
Okay.
But I'd get in soon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And I can skip the whole go to a doctor thing.
Right. And some of it depends upon your insurance. So I would call the clinic and tell them who your insurance is and ask them if you need to get a referral from a physician first.
You may not have to.
Correct. Yeah.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Bill Boisenalton, Laurie Tyne Brody, our guest today, our physical therapist. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Bill Boisenalton and Laurie Tyne Brody, talking about aches and pains and sprains and strains. We've dealt a lot with knee pain today, which is kind of what we had planned to do, so sometimes your plans worked. But, of course, we're taking other kinds of questions as well, and I hope you'll join in. 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And let's turn to Marge in Madison. Marge, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I am actually not in Madison. I'm in Navarre Beach right now and looking out over the water, which is wonderful.
Jeez, we're looking out over the snow.
Yeah.
I know. I wish you had better weather. But, yeah, we're on a little snow break, I guess. So, anyway, I was calling about I have a knee problem. It kind of moves around a little bit. And I know that I have a partially torn meniscus. And I have seen a doctor, and the doctor said, oh, total knee replacement. And I walk about 5 miles a day. And have no pain with that. And even when my knee moves around, which it doesn't very often, probably because I'm very careful, it doesn't hurt. What do you think?
Oh, what do I think about what?
What I should be doing.
You have a stiff knee.
Stiffness. It's just stiff?
It's stiff.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And like after sitting for a little while, getting up, you know, watching a football game or basketball game, I get up and it's stiff.
Yeah. That's pretty classic arthritis. So the knee likes to move. So think of it like this. When your car is sitting in the garage, the engine, the oil sits in the oil pan because the engine's not running. You start up the engine and the oil goes out and lubricates all the moving parts. Your joints are a little bit the same way. You have synovial fluid that lubricates your joint surfaces. When you just sit, it's like the oil just sits in the pan. The synovial fluid just kind of sits there. So what you would want to do is before you get up, you would want to get the engine started. So bending and straightening your knee a little bit, moving it, putting your foot down on the floor like you're going to stand up, but don't stand all the way up, just pushing your heel down into the floor repeatedly a few times to kind of lubricate your knee will help with some of that stiffness. But typically, as you get up and get moving, the stiffness goes away because you're lubricating your knee joint. So, what we really tell people is to avoid sitting for long periods of time, precondition a little bit before you get up, and that's really the best you can hope for in a knee that's pretty degenerative.
Yeah, and with a total knee replacement, that's going to help more if you had trouble with walking.
It's
not going to make much difference in the stiffness of a seat.
Right.
And the fact you can walk as far as you have, and it doesn't hurt when you're up and moving around. I don't know, a Synvisc injection, would it be a place
for
that?
Yeah, you know, the physicians really make the call on whether or not Synvisc is going to work. It depends upon how bad the arthritis is. So if it's too far gone, they say Synvisc isn't going to help you. But it's really a question for someone who's looked at an MRI or looked at the inside of the knee to decide if Synvisc would help or not. But Bill's right. You know, a knee replacement isn't going to do much for that feeling of stiffness when you get up after sitting. But the fact that you're walking 5 miles and can do pretty much everything without any pain.
Really can.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can, and it doesn't hurt when I'm walking at all.
Yeah.
And that Synvisc takes about, anywhere from 8 to 12 weeks, I think, to take hold. It was a long time for me. It was about 12 weeks. But then once it took hold, what a difference.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Something to think about, Marge. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Facebook question from Amy. I've had this issue with my knees for the last couple of years. I'm a runner, but have been very limited with my mileage due to knee pain. If I wear a knee brace, this helps significantly alleviating pain while running, but I'm not sure if the brace is a good idea. Can you recommend hip exercises to strengthen the hip?
Well, the question is always, if you're a runner, why you're having problems in one knee and not the other. So maybe it's because of the slope of the road that she's running on, or maybe there's some sort of an intrinsic asymmetry from side to side. It could be a leg length difference. It could be a hip rotation. It could be a pelvic issue. It could be a foot issue. So really, picking the exercise depends upon what's going on. So in general, we work on strengthening the glute muscles, the gluteus medius that helps externally rotate your hip, and the gluteus maximus that extends it, because when your foot lands at heel strike, those muscles control your knee kind of rolling in and caving in and decelerates your body towards mid-stance. So those are really the big muscle groups. So any exercises working hip extension backwards or hip abduction out to the side are really what we focus on. But it's not, again, do that exercise or not do that exercise. It's how it's done and if it's hitting the right muscle groups that you need to work on to improve whatever your mechanical fault is.
There you go. We had an email from Patty who's been taking strong woman classes through Madison or maybe Milwaukee School Community Recreation Program. But I have learned to listen to my 64-year-old knee joint. I feel much stronger in the upper body, but what or how do I perform some of the exercises like lunges, squats, etc. that hurt if I go too far? At the moment, I just attempt to do these exercises very carefully and clearly not all the way. I try not to push it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the key.
Well,
I think Patty answered that by saying that that I don't go too far. Now, that being said, something like a squat or lunge, there's a fair amount of technique to doing those and doing them correctly, as in where's your weight? Is your weight on the balls of your feet? Is it back on your heels? Is your center of gravity centered correctly between your 2 feet? So again, it's not just lunge yes or lunge no, but how you do it. So if those are things that you're interested in, again, one or two visits with the PT to look at you, to look at your mechanics, to look at how your body moves to help you figure out how to do those things in a way that don't hurt might be a useful investment.
Yeah, you know, the type of pain we encourage people not to work through is any pain that's sharp, stabbing, pinching, shooting, or they get a sharp catch sensation that you don't want to work through. You're just going to stir things up. But Lori's right. It's the quality of how the exercise is being done sometimes makes all the difference in the world. What does it feel like when you try to do it?
Jackie in Onalaska, thanks for waiting. Hello, your turn.
Hi, I am 54 years old, and in my job I have to stand up all day. I noticed last summer my arch was starting to hurt, and I assume by what I've read, and I have a swollen ankle now today, that my arch is, I've always had flat feet. And I think it's collapsing, or do you call it prolapse? I'm not sure, because it looks like it's almost turning in or down.
Mm-hmm.
And before I go to the doctor, before I can get an appointment, is there anything, some kind of brace or anything? I did buy some inserts this weekend that seemed to help a little bit. But the problem was I walked around the Mall of America this weekend as well.
So
I know I made it worse. But
was it a standard arch support that you bought?
Yeah, it was from a major line, but they said it was a better one. It was
okay.
I'm not sure on the name of it. I can look at it if you need to know.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a stiff one.
Yeah, so that would be the place to start, is with an arch support that will help essentially bring the floor up to your arch and give you a little bit of support. I'm a little concerned about, you're telling me that your ankle was swollen,
yeah.
Because typically that's not associated with flat feet. So I don't know what else is going on with you that your ankle would swell. Is it both ankles or just the one?
Just the one.
Okay.
And it's also my heel. It started last year, kind of like was burning all the time, the top of my arch almost, the top of my foot. And mm-hmm. now it's gone into the ankle itself.
Okay. Yeah, that, you know, this is something that needs to be looked at, because those are not typical symptoms that are associated with garden variety flat-footedness.
Okay.
So I would stick with the arch supports, limit the amount of time that you're on your feet to the best of your ability, and make an appointment to see your doctor to get a better look at that.
Okay, and again, just anybody special? Do I have to go through
I'd start with your primary.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks very much for calling. Facebook, Doug asks, I play soccer and have a chronic groin pain since last summer. How can I strengthen this area or improve that condition?
Well, the question is, what's actually going on with his groin? You can have groin muscle issues that, you know, usually respond to strengthening exercises in your groin. There's also, you can have referred pain from your hip that goes into your groin. So there could be an underlying hip issue. And there's also a little joint right at the junction of your two hip bones.
Yeah, so the sacroiliac joint mm-hmm. or pubic symphysis.
The pubic symphysis, right, where you can have some pubic symphysis problems and some instability there, possibly could be off a little bit and require some sort of manual therapy to realign your pubic symphysis. You can have inflammation of the pubic symphysis that they will sometimes hold your breath, inject to improve that pain too. So the real question is, what's causing the groin pain? Garden variety mm-hmm. muscle strain should be getting better. So figuring out the underlying cause and why it hasn't gotten better over several months would be the key.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Our guest today, Bill Boisenault from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic, and Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine. They'll be with us right up till 12:30 today. Call in at 800-642-1234. Back after the news. So happy to have you along on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here with a look at your patellofemoral pain, knee pain in other words, or other kinds of pain issues, with a couple of experts. Bill Boisenault, senior physical therapist at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. Always a pleasure, Bill.
Great to be back, Larry. Thank you.
And Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And Laura, thanks again for coming.
Excellent to be here.
Well, it works better if I turn your mic off.
Ah, sure.
All right. No, it's fine.
My
She's
kids would like
here.
It if the microphone,
turn
if they could do
off.
That, wouldn't that be great? Wow. And if I could do that for them. Hey, there's an idea.
Well, Jerry and Prairie du Chien has a question for you. So let's go there. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm Reader Digest virgin. I'm 71-year-old male. I had a alpine ski accident on January 19th. Been diagnosed by my local orthopedic surgeon as a contusion to the left shoulder and rupture of the long head of the biceps tendon. I just started physical therapy last week, and the accident would have happened 9 weeks ago today. I'm concerned that if I should be pressing the orthopedic surgeon for some imaging of the soft tissue. He says I'm making amazing progress. I just started physical therapy last week. So I guess there's the question.
So what's define amazing progress? I mean, can you get your arm over your head?
Yeah, I can put my arm over my head. I can swing it back to a point. There's still uncomfortable pain, like maybe a level 2 or 3. It's intermittent.
Mm-hmm.
And, the range of motion I have today compared to what I had like the week or two after the accident
mm-hmm.
is, I'm pleased with it. But I don't know if I'm impatient or if I'm, one of my concerns is that if I wait too long to have soft tissue imaging done, that am I going to be like beyond repair?
Oh, so you're thinking about some kind of surgical repair?
Although my orthopedic guy says, hey, I'm a surgeon, but that's I also take it a Hippocratic oath. He says to do no harm. And there would be risks with the surgery,
yeah.
Well, if it was even warranted.
Yeah. So a long head of the biceps rupture is generally non-surgical, unless you're a professional baseball pitcher. So even though people think of the biceps as the powerhouse of your upper arm, actually it isn't. So it assists in motion, but it isn't as important as people think. So, you know, the real question is, what's the status of your rotator cuff? And I'm not, and at 9 weeks, they probably wouldn't repair that either. It sounds like you're doing well. So I would say if you're happy with your motion, you're not having a lot of pain, your arm seems functional, I'm not sure what they would operate on to improve it. Mm-hmm. So,
okay. And my physical therapist in the assessment last week says, she's going to be treating me for rotator cuff.
Mm-hmm. You're a rotator cuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, usually if you fall on your arm at age 71, you usually injure your rotator cuff. But many people function very, very well with only a partial rotator cuff. So, again, unless you're a high-level baseball pitcher or you're still working and you're working in manual therapy where you need to do a lot of overhead work with that arm, most people do very well.
There you go.
Yeah, and, Jerry, the imaging, especially since you're making such good progress to date, there's no reason to think that that won't continue. And if you had imaging, it wouldn't change the treatment plan at this point in time as long as you're making progress. So I think you're just going to keep plugging ahead with what you are. If you hit a plateau and you're not functional, that's maybe when you revisit with the physician. But the fact is, much changed as it has in this time frame. And I understand the impatience. I'd be impatient too. I'd say the prognosis is good that you'll get more improvement yet.
Yeah, there you go. So hang in there, Jerry, and thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. And let's give Nancy in Milwaukee a chance to join us. Nancy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for having me. I'm calling to tell you that I'm 83 years old. I have no pain really anywhere. I have had both of my knees replaced 16 and 15 years ago. They are working well. I am so limber, I can practically put my ankle behind my neck, and I often sit cross-legged like a little child. So I am really pleased, and I'd like to call to give other people encouragement about needing and getting knee replacements. But the reason I'm calling is that I am noticing that both of my feet turn in. In other words, I'm wearing my shoes out on the inner heel area because both of my feet are turning in. And I'm wondering if by being so limber, am I actually in a way dislocating somehow these new knees? Well, not so new anymore, which is why I'm constantly, I can tell that my feet are pressing in the inner part of my heels all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, you could have some underlying hypermobility. It's something that we see fairly frequently. The fact that you're doing so well and your knees are doing well, I don't think it's an issue. But you could be have excessive pronation or flat-footedness in your feet, and that may be why it feels like they're rolling in. So an arch support may feel better to you and keep you from wearing out too much on the inside. Whether or not it's related to your hip or your knee replacements, it would be really difficult to tell, and I don't know that it matters because they're functioning very well, and you seem to be functioning well. So it doesn't seem as though the wearing out on the inside of your shoes is causing you any kind of discomfort or problems.
Well, it actually slows down my walking. Do you mean that I should go to one of those places that give me personalized arch supports, or just buy Dr. Scholl's or some other brand right off the pharmacy shelves?
That's probably where I would start, because if you go somewhere and you get a fancy something or other and you put them in your shoes and you spend a bunch of money for them and you don't like it and they make your feet hurt or uncomfortable or they change your mechanics in a way that starts to hurt something else, then you're going to be unhappy. So we almost always start with one of the least expensive alternatives first to see if it gives you some benefit and if it's going to make anything else hurt. And if they do, then you can talk about a little higher quality. And you don't necessarily need a custom. You can still go to a higher quality, say in the $30 to $40 range of arch supports.
Yeah, there
and,
you go.
Nancy, if you go that route, you know, your body has adjusted to your feet over all these years, so I wouldn't wear them all day long right off the bat. Kind of transition maybe a half hour in your shoes, a half hour out. And if your feet or legs are sore, then shorter periods of time. But if you put something in your shoes like this and expect to wear them all the time, all day long, you're going to have some soreness. So transition.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Nancy. Let's see, Mona in Appleton, I believe, is next. So, Mona, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I'm having a problem with my thumbs ever since I took up needle felting, which I stopped as soon as it started hurting, after about a month of doing it. I don't think I was doing it that over excessively, maybe an hour and a half at a time. I have carpal tunnel as well that I've had for many years. I never had issues with my thumbs, and both thumbs are hurting, the right one more. I clean houses for a living. I did post a picture on your Facebook page. The doctor took an x-ray. So I went back. I went to him first, then he sent me to a physical therapist. She gave me some stuff to do. She said it was not better in 2 weeks. She said I should go to a specialist. Well, that's where I'm going to go, but not till end of May. I can't get in. Just wondering what would cause the joint to move over like that. And there's also a little speck in there that he wasn't sure about what that could be. It's an old injury. It is. I'm not aware of it. But that's where the pain, all most of the pain is. And in my wrist, too. But I'm still cleaning and possibly aggravating, most likely aggravating it every day cleaning.
Right.
Okay.
So it's the base of your thumb that's giving you troubles?
Yeah, and if the joint is moved out, you can...
Right. Yeah, we see that.
It's kind of fuzzy. It's just a printout from a computer. So.
No, that's good enough. Yeah, it looks like it... Yeah. Oh, yeah, you've shifted a little bit. Oh, it looks like you're pretty bone on bone there. That joint that we're seeing... is that you're apparently shared with the world on Larry's so much for HIPAA.
Well, it's not really bone on bone. I think it's just the image came out fuzzy because
okay.
He showed it to me it wasn't bone on bone.
Oh, okay, I see. So. Well, that's a joint that's very prone to arthritis. So that's it's one of... You know, despite the discussion about hip replacements and knee replacements, it is one of the most common sites of arthritic changes in the body. You use your thumb for everything. So particularly for someone who cleans for a living and you've used your hands a lot, and then you added this new activity onto it, you probably irritated, you know, it's like going out and running too far, the hand version of that. So just backing off on activities. There are some thumb splints that you can wear for your activities, for cleaning. You tried some of that. And then it sounds as though you're seeing someone already in therapy.
Well, I went to my doctor. I'm going to be going. Well, she just quit me after one appointment. I'm going to be going to, she didn't see my x-ray, though. But I'm going to be going to a specialist, but I can't get in until the end of May. So arthritis makes the joint go out of,
yes,
like that?
Yes, it can. It can.
Okay, I just wondered.
Yeah.
Because he said the arthritis didn't look that bad to him, but
yeah.
He didn't think that's what the pain. Because the rest of my joints, I had a little arthritis on. None of them hurt.
Okay.
It's just in that area in my wrist from the carpal tunnel. Yeah.
Right. And it could also be that they hurt because genetically, you know, your thumbs were designed that way also. So you never know when you look at a snapshot at one point in time if it's always been that way, and it hurts because your joints aren't aren't congruent, or if this lack of congruency is the result of years of using your hands in a certain way. It's kind of a chicken and egg question.
There's basically nothing I can do about it besides stop using them then.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. It's, again, it's not an all or none. It's how you use it. And if there are some modifications to how you do your daily activities that can keep loading of that joint within that joint's tolerance. So there's too little load, such as sitting in your recliner all day. There's the right amount of load, and there's too much load. So you're in the too much load end of the continuum. So working with a professional who can help you figure out where your overload is coming from and talk to you about strategies, bringing your loading back into what your joint can tolerate is doable. And it may be that you can go back to that needlepoint activity if they can figure out how to manage the total load on your joint.
And Mona, end of May is a long time off. Maybe you've done this already, but I would call that clinic and make sure you're on a cancellation list, because people cancel.
I am.
You are. Okay, good.
Yeah, and I am. I'm hoping to get in sooner.
Okay, good. And sometimes working through your physician, they can push a little bit, especially since with your vocation, you need to use your hands.
Yeah.
That they can somehow get you in, you know, in less than 2 months. And there's splints of different size. Sounds like you tried a splint, but there's different kinds of splints. There's splints of different sizes.
Well, he had me, before he took the x-ray, he just had me put on a splint that immobilizes a thumb. Yeah. First 2 days, it was nice. It was just actually really comfortable and everything. But then it started feeling like it was pushing on it, and it started just making it hurt more, so I stopped wearing it.
Yeah.
I was supposed to wear it 2 weeks straight all the time, but it was hurting too much.
Well, maybe just like our last caller, maybe having it on for 30 minutes and taking it off for 30 minutes, somewhere in between of all or nothing. I think that's a good idea.
It
would be better than nothing.
Well, yeah. and even though he couldn't see arthritis, honestly, arthritis occurs on a cellular level. So you may not see the manifestations on something as, you know, sort of a gross image of a radiograph. So it doesn't mean that there's not arthritis there. And as I said earlier, arthritis likes to move. So maybe a couple days or a day of immobilization was enough to calm down some inflammation in the area, and then the immobilization became detrimental. You began underloading your joint, which is generally just as bad as overloading your joint.
Yeah, they kept cracking. When I took it off, it would just make cracking noises.
Yeah,
but you know, but I wasn't even trying to.
Yeah, but that's okay. That goes along with rough surfaces. You need to be able to work and use your thumb. And so using that splint periodically, I think, was – and cracking we don't worry about so much. As long as it's not getting stuck or caught, sometimes I can sublux a joint. As long as that's not happening.
There you go. Mona, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. I want to give Greg in Janesville a chance to join us. Greg, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I've got some issues with my back. And I'm actually doing physical therapy right now in the pool that they have, and it's got a treadmill in it also. And I don't seem to – it feels good in the water, but out of the water, it cracks, it pops. I can feel every movement I do if I bend down, and it just goes like pop, pop, pop. And you can feel it. And I just wonder, I know I've got a lot of arthritis in it. My spine sort of, it looks like the bone actually touch each other. How possible is it that you're wearing bone down in the spine? And is this a good routine in a pool to help my back?
Well, in terms of your first question, arthritic changes can occur in the spine like they occur in people's thumbs and knees and hips.
Okay.
It can be the same process. And it can get to the point where it's pretty close to bone on bone. And the pops and cracks can be associated with that. Sometimes it's a tendon kind of snapping over a bone. To be honest, we tend not to worry so much about the pops and cracks as long as you're not stuck or have sharp pain associated with it. But if you have arthritis in your back, the pool is a good place to exercise at a fairly high level, especially from an aerobic perspective, and then also doing some core work. I'm assuming you're doing more than just being on the treadmill as part of the PT?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, they have – it actually has like a wave pool or the force comes in it, so you're walking against current, and it does really make a difference to me. When I'm in that pool doing that, I feel like my back is fine. I've also had, and I am doing core strengthening also, just to let you know. But I do get, you know, I've had shots in the back, which I don't know if it was cortisone or what, in the spine, but I've also had the nerves burned. And it seems like when they burn those nerves and stuff that it does make a big difference. So I'm just wondering, you know, I had an EMG done because my right leg was starting to tingle. It felt like it was numb and tingling. And the doctor said something about an L5 problem.
Yeah, the L5 nerve can get irritated. Are you having tingling now or currently?
I do on and off.
Okay. All right. So can I ask how long you've been going to see the physical therapist? How long have you been working in the pool and the core thing?
Well, the pool and the core, I just started, I would say, probably a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, to be honest.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, so the fact that you are able to do that much in the pool is a really good thing. And I understand it comes back shortly after you get out of the pool. But if you've got that kind of arthritic changes, things are not going to change within a matter of weeks. And so and the goal will be that you transition to more and more of a land-based program as you kind of build up your foundation or your core here. I would just make sure that the physical therapist knows about the pins and needles in your leg. There are some positioning and some exercises that we do to get symptoms up out of the leg. And so if you haven't discussed that in a little bit of detail, make sure you do. But I would give it at least 4 to 6, maybe 8 weeks before you start thinking about something other than what you're doing.
Okay, good. I just wanted to call and make sure I was on the right track.
Yeah, sounds like you are. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Catherine in Wausau, hi. Thank you for calling.
And thank you. Great program, always. I have a friend that has problems with his shoulder. The shoulder keeps on popping out of joint, and sometimes he can get it back himself, and sometimes he has to go in for manipulation to get it back. They give him a relaxant, and then they put it back into place. Is there anything that he can do, and is he looking, is the best shot to have surgery?
May I ask how old this person is?
He's in his 30s.
And if he's been dislocating for a while, he's probably looking at surgery. So as you get older, you're less likely to need surgery, partly because your activities change and partly because any significant problems have been picked up when you're younger. But to have that frequently, that's frequent a dislocation. Do you know if there was one trauma that took place, some original injury?
I don't know. I think it's kind of hard to say because he's pretty active and he does a lot of hard work, and he's done motocross racing and has had problems with that. And if he were to have surgery, would it be like a rotator cuff?
No, it won't be a rotator cuff. So generally, the instabilities fall into two categories as a gross generalization. There's an acute traumatic dislocation where you often knock off a piece of bone and the labrum and some ligament in your shoulder, in which case they go in and they repair that area. And those kinds of instabilities are best treated with surgery. The other kind of instabilities are chronic hypermobility instabilities where there's been no frank dislocation. If you look on an x-ray, there's no lesion. It's called a Bankart lesion. Sometimes you'll see a second bony lesion called a Hill-Sachs lesion for people who have dislocated frequently. But in any case, the hypermobile people do best with rehabilitation. Those people are sent to physical therapy for a specific rehabilitation program. They do not do well with surgery. So rehab is the first step. So for your friend, the first step is figuring out what kind of shoulder instability he has, and that will dictate the intervention.
What he does. All right. Yep. There you go. Thank you so much, Catherine, for calling. And Bill and Lori, as always, thank you so much
Thank you.
You're back April 20th.
Excellent.
Monday, April 20th.
Do you think it'll be snowing?
I hope not. It better not be. I'm not coming if it's snowing.
We'll call in.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Oh, man. Thank you so much. Lori Tyne, Brody, and Bill Boys and Alt, they will be back on April 20th, as a matter of fact. Tomorrow, Donna Lotzer joins us to talk about poison prevention issues. And then at 11:45, Judy Knutson offers some tips on having a healthy diet on a budget. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.